Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
Who to call when no one obeys the law, and there ain't no Iron Man that can come and save us all. Power to the people and Luke Cage the cause, and the cops got it wrong, we don't think Cage involved.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When Netflix released the show Luke Cage last month, a new superhero came to screens across the country, a black man who is bulletproof. He joins a Marvel universe that has come to include Jessica Jones, a super strong rape survivor, Daredevil, a blind man whose other senses are super heightened. It's a long way from the old Superman, but related to this hour On Point, the new faces of the American superhero. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Who's your favorite superhero? Why? And what do you see in the new superheroes on TV, in film? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. With us today from New York is Abraham Reisman, Associate Culture Editor for New York Magazine and Vulture.com. Abraham, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, I am so excited to get to talk about all this stuff. I can't believe they pay me to talk about superheroes.
Be amazed. And from Washington, Alyssa Rosenberg is with us, pop culture writer for The Washington Post. Alyssa, welcome back. It's great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. It's always great to be with you.
Abraham, would you take us in here? Because a bunch of people may have plugged into this and others may not have at all. Introduce us to three superheroes, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and he who is known as Daredevil.
Ah, yes. Well, Daredevil is not an advancement in representation, given that he is a straight, white, cis man. But that doesn't mean he's terrible. We don't have to hate him for that. But
He's blind. That's not exactly Superman.
He is blind. That's true. He is different.
And I mean,
able,
people with disabilities are some of the most underrepresented Americans in popular
you
culture,
know what?
Period.
Sorry. I take it back. I completely take it back. So here's the deal. Luke Cage is a character who debuted in 1972 in the pages of Luke Cage, Hero for Hire. He has been around ever since
then. This was a comic book in those days. Now it's on Netflix.
Yes, right. He was adapted to be a character on Marvel's Netflix properties, which were announced in 2013 and started debuting with Daredevil Season 1 in 2015.
Okay.
And so Luke is a guy who was wrongfully imprisoned and was subject to very extreme experiments there. He got superpowers, which consist of super strength and super endurance. He is bulletproof, as that's the word that gets tossed around. And
I mean, it's literally true. In the trailer, they show bullets, you know, shooting into his toward his hand and then just smushing against his skin.
Absolutely. That said, if you watch the full series, there are magic bullets. I mean, not exactly magic,
okay,
but there are sort of super bullets that can get through him. But, you know, I believe this will be true with Alyssa. As nerds, we are big nitpickers
good,
over here.
Good, good. So, pick the nits on all of this.
So he's played by Mike Coulter in the Netflix series. He debuted in Jessica Jones last year, and now he has his own series. And Jessica Jones, speaking of her, is a character who is much more recent. She debuted in 2001 in the pages of a Marvel comic called Alias. And she is, as you put it, a rape survivor. In the comics, she's not exactly a rape survivor. She's a sexual abuse survivor. But on the show, it's much more straightforward.
That is, again, the Netflix show that this one debuted last fall, right? 2015.
Correct. That debuted about a year ago, starring Kristen Ritter as the title character. And it followed her adventures trying to take down her rapist, a guy named Kilgrave. It was a big hit. Netflix doesn't release numbers about viewership, so we can't know exactly how many people watched it. But it certainly got a lot of buzz anecdotally. I know lots of people who don't otherwise care about superhero fiction who were really into it. And Daredevil is a character who's been around much longer than the other two. Matt Murdock by day, a lawyer, and by
night. Blind superhero, I guess.
He is a blind superhero. He was blinded in an accident that exposed him to chemicals that gave him a heightened set of senses other than his vision. And he's been a popular character, especially since the 1980s, when a creator named Frank Miller and an artist named David Mazzucchelli a writer named Frank Miller and an artist named David Mazzucchelli took over the Daredevil series. He's been a reasonably big deal ever since then. And yes, he was in the first Marvel Netflix series last year, last spring.
Alyssa, of course, it's interesting. A lot of these characters have long histories in the pages of comic books. But when they come to the video screen, the screen at all, there's a different level of attention that gets paid. What does it say that Netflix, Marvel, are now bringing, the bulletproof black man, the rape survivor, and before that, the blind superhero to the screen, Alyssa?
So it's worth remembering that we've had a Daredevil movie before. So mm-hmm. he's been treated like sort of a top-tier blockbuster character in the past. Mm-hmm. But I think I have very mixed feelings about what's going on here because these aren't characters who are being introduced as, standalone blockbuster-level characters. And, the characters who have become the core of the Marvel Cinematic Universe weren't necessarily the most popular comic book characters. Iron Man, to a certain extent, was – and Abraham might correct me on this, was, maybe even a little bit sort of nerdy or obscure. But they,
I would not correct you on that. You're absolutely okay. Right.
In the comic book pages.
For the record,
he's a huge Hollywood hit.
Correct.
Yes. But they sort of were willing to take big movie level, let's spend $200 to $250 million on this movie, gambles on these relatively obscure characters. And now the characters who are getting rolled out in Netflix series, that's where we're getting our first standalone female superhero story. That's mm-hmm. where we're getting our first standalone black superhero story. And to a certain extent, this is about the difference between the movie business and Netflix-specific television business model.
Meaning what? Movie. They've got to have the huge blockbuster for movies and not necessarily for the Netflix products?
So what Marvel or any other movie company wants when they spend $200 million in a movie is for it to make $1 billion because they're going to spend $200 million making the movie, another $200 to $300 million advertising it. They need it to be appealing to the widest number of people possible. Netflix and other streaming services, by contrast, are much more interested in developing series that small groups of people, or not small groups of people,
smaller
but smaller
than
groups
Hollywood
of people
mm-hmm.
will be astonishingly passionate about. Mm-hmm. And that can be a great thing for storytelling. Something like Luke Cage is extremely specific. You can have debates over, great crime novelists and, who created the better sort of black character. You can have the sort of barbershop scenes that play such a big role in the first couple episodes of the season. You can be really specific about mm-hmm. sexual assault and questions of consent in a way that you maybe couldn't do if you were trying to get hundreds of millions of people to buy movie tickets all over the world. So the Netflix shows can be much more specific and rich for that, but it also means that, it's sort of a sign that these topics are considered niche topics. Mm-hmm. And I feel really conflicted about that because I love the specificity that's the result, but I hate the statement that sexual assault is a niche topic, given the role it's playing in our current presidential campaign. It really, really is not.
Well, for that matter, the travails of a black man, bulletproof in a time
Absolutely.
When, of course, black deaths have been what people chanting about this in the street. I've got a little bit here from the introduction to the character of Luke Cage from the trailer for that series. Luke, as you say, Abraham, is played by Mike Coulter. He's trying to figure out his identity with his mentor, Pop, played by Frankie Faison.
Still not sure what I am. I'm just living my life day to day.
You should be out there helping people.
You think I asked for any of this? I was put in some tank like an exotic fish. Came out with abilities. I just want to be left the hell alone.
Well, that would be a waste.
Luke Cage, bulletproof black man, is the shorthand. Abraham, Alyssa, stand by. Ellis is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Ellis, you're on. What do you hear? What do you see?
Oh, hey. Hey, Tom. Well, I think it's really interesting that Luke Cage is essentially what Superman used to be before he got a lot of the really random, weird powers they started giving to him in the comic book, like laser eyes or laser vision, x-ray vision.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, Superman was just, like, super strong. Like, he could jump really high. He was really super strong. And I think it's really interesting that Luke Cage is essentially that same kind of superhero, but written a bit differently.
Yeah, Abraham, would you buy that Luke Cage is just Black Superman? Early days.
It's a very interesting point that I had not thought about. There are still key differences in that Superman was sort of coded as being Jewish. You know, Jewish creators put him out in the world, but he was not, you know, explicitly a member of a marginalized group. But you do make a good point that he initially was not the invincible godlike being that we have today in Superman movies and comics and TV shows. But dovetailing with that, you also suggest an interesting point in that the original incarnation of Superman in his first couple of years of existence was a pretty progressive figure. A lot of people don't know that because it was sort of erased as time went on.
Well, we just remember Truth, Justice, and the American Way.
Right. But early on, he would beat up domestic abusers and loan sharks and people who were unfairly jacking up rent. There's a really great book called "The Superman, the Complete Autobiography" or "Unauthorized Autobiography," I can't remember, by Glenn Weldon, and it's really worth a read because, yeah, he initially was this not exactly radical but progressive figure in a way that, to a certain extent, Luke Cage is.
Is Luke Cage that kind of socially conscious superhero, Alyssa?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that's really interesting and, again, specific about Luke Cage is that the series spends a lot of time debating sort of blackness and respectability and who's a role model and, you know, how to present yourself and gain power in the world. And so I get a little exhausted by trying to sort these stories into progressive or conservative, mm-hmm. because one of the great things that art in general can do and that superhero stories have often done a really good job of doing is getting at political issues in a way that's not strictly partisan. So if you look at something like Arrow, that show is, you know, a big, and that airs on the CW. It's the creation of Greg Berlanti, who basically handles DC's television series. You know, that's a big debate about vigilantism, what the role of extremely rich people in troubled cities is. And so, you know, a lot of these shows are political without being sort of neatly partisan.
Alyssa Rosenberg with The Washington Post. Please stand by. Abraham Riesman at New York Magazine and Vulture.com. We're talking about the new face or faces of the American superhero. Of course, that's the old sound right there, John Williams' iconic theme song. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new faces of the American superhero, all genders, all colors, all attitudes. The theme from Jessica Jones behind us there came out last year on Netflix, a rape survivor with superpowers now. And that's only one who have new prominence, not on the Hollywood screen exactly, but certainly on the TV screen, in a wider range of characters, colors, you name it, than the classic cookie cutter American superhero. You can join us this hour. Are you following these new American superheroes? Are you ready to thrill to the exploits of a bulletproof black man, a blind crime fighter, a superpowered rape survivor? And what's it say about us, our time, Hollywood, Netflix, TV, that these are new superheroes? Abraham Riesman is with us, associate culture editor at New York Magazine and Vulture.com. New York Times has called him the smartest authority on the comic book genre. He's with us today. Alyssa Rosenberg is here, pop culture writer for The Washington Post, and we always love to have her right here. Think all the way back, 1950s, the adventures of Superman, played by here George Reeves, was an emblem of American values. Here's the introduction to his TV show.
Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Okay, 1950s. Roll the tape forward. Debuting on Netflix last year, here's Jessica Jones and her nemesis, the mind-controlling villain Kilgrave. Kilgrave's been infatuated with her in the storyline, with Jessica since they first met, and sometime before the show begins, he used his mind control to force her into a relationship, sexual relationship with him. Jessica, played by Kristen Ritter, confronts Kilgrave, played by David Tennant, about that relationship.
We used to do a lot more than just touch hands.
Yeah.
It's called rape.
What? Which part of staying in five-star hotels, eating in all the best places, doing whatever the hell you wanted is rape?
The part where I didn't want to do any of it. Not only did you physically rape me, but you violated every cell in my body and every thought in my goddamn head.
It's not what I was trying
to do. It doesn't matter what you were trying to do. You raped me again and again and again.
Alyssa Rosenberg, how does that work as the seedbed for superpowers here, thematically, but also just technically? What are her powers?
So Jessica's an interesting character because, and this is true of a lot of the Netflix show characters, actually. She can fly, but she's not great at it.
She sort of jumps and falls.
She can jump
and eventually comes down.
Yes, it's sort of halfway in between.
Hurtling.
She's strong, but she's not, you know, Thor or Captain America or Superman strong. And I think it's worth mentioning what Kilgrave's power is too, right? He has, if you hear his voice, he can control you completely. And so he can get people to kill themselves, to kill other people. And so he basically eliminated Jessica's ability to consent entirely. Mm-hmm. And part of what's interesting about Jessica Jones is that at the beginning of the series, she's really in hiding. She doesn't want to use her power. She just wants to stay under the radar because his power sort of nullifies hers or weaponizes hers, right? I mean,
no, what does that mean, Alyssa?
He, you know, if he controls her entirely, he can force her to consent to sex, or he can force her to use her powers to hurt or even kill other people.
I did not realize that. In other words, she, even with her powers now, she can't resist his mind control.
You know, it's something that's
It gets a little complicated,
okay,
but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, as it always does. But nits aside, I mean, he can control her entirely. He can control anyone who can hear his voice. And so, you know, part of what's interesting about the series is that Kilgrave has sort of convinced himself that Jessica wants him, right? That her consent that he has compelled, that he has sort of forced her to give, still counts as genuine consent. He's really romanticized their relationship, even though her description of it is completely accurate. He, you know, he's sort of underdeveloped as a human being. He kind of lacks a moral compass. Because he can make everyone give him everything that he's ever wanted, he's never had to try to sort of learn to be good or accountable. And so it is
talk about ripped
sort of
from the headlines, Abraham. I mean, of course, they wouldn't know where everything was heading when they put her on Netflix a year plus ago. But still,
it's certainly unnerving.
Wow. We've got a bunch of callers for the two of you at Antonio in Atlanta, Georgia. Antonio, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What do you see?
So my question or comment about Luke Cage was, first, I love the series. I got on and I binge-watched from front to end. But I wanted to address the imagery in the show. And I wanted to ask if it was just me or did anybody see a problem maybe in the idea of a bulletproof black man with all the events that we have going on with unarmed black men being shot on a weekly basis. Do you think there might be a problem with putting that kind of imagery into the heads of a lot of folks in America that, honestly, we are diverse, but there are people out there who've never actually had firsthand experience with the other races? And is that the kind of image that you want?
Antonio, I want to know, ask you what exactly you're asking there. I mean, do you think it's like too revolutionary, that it's going to be upsetting or comforting? Or what would be the issue be? Or just too volatile?
Well, as far as upsetting, I think our country's showing that we can deal with upsetting. You know, with our current presidential election, we can deal with upsetting. But I just think that, you know, me personally, I was in the military. I ran across a lot of young white men who actually never had any experience with a black person. They never even met a black person before. Now, I may be reaching a little bit, but it just seems like maybe it's insensitive. I don't know, to have the idea of a bulletproof black man. I just think that's...
But, well, I mean,
doing more harm than good.
Abraham, what do you say?
Maybe this isn't what you're saying, Antonio, but, you know, one thing that kind of concerned me was there's a scene in Luke Cage where he encounters a couple of cops who go after him. He's on the run from the law and he ends up beating them up. I mean, he knocks one of them out and throws the other into a windshield. And I couldn't help but feel like this is totally unintentional on the part of the show's creators, especially Cheo Hadari Coker, the showrunner. But it felt a little bit kind of like what Darren Wilson, the guy who shot Michael Brown, the cop who shot Michael Brown, said about thinking that Michael Brown looked like a demon and describing him as being kind of almost like the Incredible Hulk, you know, this unnaturally strong presence that could take him out, that he was sort of a living weapon even if he didn't necessarily have a gun. And again, I don't know if this is what you're saying, Antonio, but it did sort of trouble me that you have this imagery where a black man is more powerful than the average person.
But isn't that the whole idea? I mean, you've had white guys more powerful than the average person forever.
I think.
Sure, it was just in an encounter with the police, you know.
Yeah, right now.
Well, and I also think what Abraham's getting at is that there's been this long tradition of describing black men as if they are somehow a different species from the rest of us. Like, they're stronger, right. They're more violent. And it's hard to get at the fantasy of a black man who is impervious to police violence, to really violence from anyone, without kind of invoking that troubled history. And so the fantasy and the scary racist projection kind of lock onto each other, and it's difficult to separate them. I don't think that that history necessarily means that the fantasy is not powerful. I mean, the idea of people being able to resist being just mowed down when that feels like it's happening constantly is, I think, a really sort of powerful, ameliorative fantasy. But it is very hard to separate that from sort of this historically racist image.
Of course, there's a lot of history to that. I mean, our friend Larry Tye wrote about this in his book Superman. All the way back in the 30s, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster putting Superman out there. Of course, a lot of Americans never thought of him as having Jewish roots, but these were Jewish writers, and there's a lot of references in the Kal-El and a lot of the words there to biblical, like Torah references. They were looking maybe for a strong representative in the face of the Nazi threat then.
But Tom, don't you think that kind of flies in the face of the historical depictions of Jews as sort of physically, like, to the extent that Jews have been portrayed as a separate species, I think we've been portrayed as sort of, you know, weak, rodent-like, and so that, you know,
here was their
Superman. Superman
that,
is,
right?
Yes, but it is opposed to that racist fantasy rather than sort of interlocking with it. And
right.
So it's
okay, but does that mean a black man can't be strong because the
I totally agree with you.
Man?
I don't think we should give up the sort of the comforting fantasy of this man who can't be killed just because it necessarily, you know,
has
a relationship to other stereotypes. Yeah.
I want
to
get Roxane Gay in here. She's the author of the forthcoming companion series to Marvel's Black Panther comics called World of Wakanda. It's going to feature queer black superheroes. But let me just get the sound of that engagement, that encounter that you described there here first, and we'll go right to Roxane. This is from Luke Cage. Luke is wanted for a series of crimes he did not commit. He's stopped here by two police officers, and Antonio in Atlanta, you're exactly right, this puts it right in the headlines, as he's walking down the middle of a street in a hoodie. And the officers, played by Tyler Evans and Guy Fernandez, they confront Luke, Mike Coulter. Luke's wounded and on the run from the villain Diamondback. He reluctantly attacks one of the officers. The other officer fires at him, but the bullets don't pierce the bulletproof black man's skin.
I was taking a walk, minding my business.
I need to see some ID.
To walk?
Turn around, take down your hoodie.
May I ask why?
Because I said so.
It is him.
On the ground, now! Hands behind your back!
Get on the ground, now!
I'm really sorry, guys.
You're under arrest.
Superhero on the ground, and it doesn't go so well there for those cops. Abraham Reisman, Alyssa Rosenberg, please stand by. Roxane Gay joins us right now from Lafayette, Indiana. Feminist writer, critic, professor. She's writing The World of Wakanda. Ta-Nehisi Coates, of course, has Black Panther out there. She's the first black woman to write for Marvel. Roxane, thank you very much for being with us. Welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
We'll look at what you're doing with Wakanda. What do you think about Luke Cage?
I think Luke Cage is a great step in the right direction for expanding the black superhero universe. And, you know, I think it's not accidental that Luke Cage one of the few black superheroes that we have is bulletproof. It's a direct response to the threat that the black body has faced consistently over time. It has nothing to do with how white people see black people, but rather how what black people need to do to survive white people.
Yeah, yeah. You can see where that hunger would come from. Roxanne, describe what you're going to be writing in World of Wakanda. Who is made super there?
In World of Wakanda, it focuses on the Dora Milaje, which is the all-women fighting guard that protects Black Panther and the royal family of Wakanda. Mm-hmm. And so my comic focuses on Ayo and Anika, who are two of the most significant women in the Dora Milaje. And there is also a secondary character named Fulami that is also going to be interesting.
And the two you write most about, what they peel away, right? They, I think they get tired of protecting the great royal figure, and they sort of strike out on their own?
They do. I haven't gotten there yet. I'm sort of filling in a lot of the backstory. Mm-hmm. And by the end of my run, they are going to be where they are currently in Ta-Nehisi's run.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's writing Black Panther. So what are you aiming for there? If we've been talking about a blind superhero, a rape survivor superhero, a bulletproof black man superhero, you're writing about queer black superheroes. What issues are you looking to, I don't know, deal with, or just good stories to tell?
I'm looking to just tell good stories and to show that heroism comes in all forms and that it can come specifically in the form of black queer women.
Is there empowerment simply in telling the story of superheroes of many different stripes, flavors, Roxanne?
You know, I think we overuse the word empowerment.
Yeah.
I think that depends on a number of things, but I do think that it offers young black girls representation to see women who look like them, who are doing amazing things and who are capable and who can protect others and who can also be vulnerable.
Let's go to Michael in Madison, Wisconsin. Michael, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment about earlier the format at which these stories are coming to us. I actually really appreciate that they're coming to us in a serial form because it allows the storytelling to really shine through and the traumatic event not to be relegated to a flashback that sets up a big fight scene. While the blockbusters really do get a lot more press that are they're candy, they're fun to watch, but they don't address nearly as much as these Netflix shows have been doing and really get into the way that the survivors are feeling and the way that they're affected by these traumatic events. And I really like that the storytelling really shines through, and I think the medium really allows that.
Alyssa, how about it that here we have a chance to really delve into the issues that are perhaps represented in these superheroes?
I agree with that sort of 95%. The one thing I would say is that Netflix, for some reason, has decided that all of these stories have to be 13 episodes long.
Oh, God,
and,
I know. Oh.
And I wish that there was a little bit, either a willingness to make these 6 or 8 or 10 episodes long, sort of depending on the story, or to introduce a few more procedural elements, because I totally agree I would hate seeing, you know, Jessica's experience with Kilgrave be reduced to just like a knockout at the end of a 2.5 hour blockbuster.
It's not long enough, or it's too long, overworked.
I think it's often too long that they end up sort of padding these stories overall. They sort of run out of momentum to a certain extent. And I would rather either, if these are going to be completely serialized seasons of television, I think they should run shorter. Or they should be more willing to introduce some procedural elements because
all of these
characters sort of work in great procedural sort of private eye professions. And so you can still show the impact of Jessica's trauma and experiences as she's working cases for other people. Same thing with Luke. I think that you can continue to explore all of the serialized themes, but that some of these stories might benefit from being either shorter if they are completely serialized or slightly more procedural if they, for some reason, they have to run 13
episodes.
Maybe
get some more robust storytelling in there. Abraham Reisman, I want to get you on that as well. Roxanne Gay, who will be out with World of Wakanda coming up soon. Alyssa Rosenberg with The Washington Post. Stand by all, please. We're talking about the new faces of the American superhero. You can join us. What do you want from an American superhero now? I'm Tom Ashbrook with the Batman theme from way back when behind us, 1966. This is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new faces of the American superhero, all genders, all colors, all attitudes. Spider-Man behind us right there, but now we've got more. Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Supergirl, and right on. You can join us this hour. Is this giving permission to more Americans, all Americans, to, in their mind's eye, put on a cape and fly, be super, dream? Go way back, 1950s, is the opening sequence to George Reeves' original TV Superman.
More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Jessica Jones on Netflix now, episode 3. Luke Cage is actually in there. He gets his own show a little later, but they're just getting to know each other. He asks Jessica about her powers.
Can you punch through a wall? Can you stop a moving car?
A slow-moving car.
Can you fly?
It's more like jumping and then falling.
Jumping, then falling. Luke Cage this fall has his own show on Netflix. Here's a bit in episode 12. He breaks up a robbery in a convenience store. Rapper Method Man happens to be inside the store, and later he tells the story on a talk radio show. Method Man and host Sway both play themselves.
As far as I'm concerned, Luke Cage saved my life, man.
That's what's up, man. You know what? That don't sound like no cop killer to me.
For real, for real. You know, it's something powerful about seeing a black man that's bulletproof and unafraid. Come on, y'all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Streets got mad love for Cage. I got mad love for Cage, man, and he won ours.
We're talking superheroes. Roxane Gay is with us. She's author of the forthcoming companion series to Marvel's Black Panther comics called World of Wakanda. Abraham Reisman is here, associate culture editor at New York Magazine, Vulture.com. Alyssa Rosenberg is here, pop culture writer for The Washington Post. And lots of response online. Leslie writes to us on Twitter, so far Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage have been great. They have shown that anybody can change their world. Okay. Matt writes, Luke Cage is the LAPD's worst nightmare, bulletproof black man. Toyota says, please ask your guests, what is the fascination in the public for people with what she calls godly powers? Lisa, what about it? What's the fascination?
You know, I think that there is this really strong psychological response to people who seem to be impervious, not just to sort of the everyday insults, but to the bodily threats that people face as women, as people of color. That's a really comforting fantasy. And I think it's also really powerful to feel like there are people out there who could protect us, who could protect our country. I would say, though, one thing that I've been really excited about with the work that Ta-Nehisi and Roxanne are doing and that Ryan Coogler is going to be doing with the Black Panther movie is sort of moving this fantasy for a big, you know, mass blockbuster audience out of an American context, because the superhero fantasy is very tied up in ideas about American power and American goodness. And one of the things that Black Panther, you know, lets us do, not only is Wakanda, you know, the source of this great physically strong superhero, but it is an incredibly technologically advanced nation. And so sort of disaggregating the idea of technical advancement, of physical power, of sort of moral superiority from the American context and acknowledging that that is not, you know, sort of part of American exceptionalism, I think is something that is just both a really interesting intellectual project and a really fascinating kind of storytelling.
Roxanne, so what's it like to take the American-ness out of a superhero story for you?
It's really exciting because it allows readers to see that superheroes are not just an American phenomenon, that they are everywhere. And it's particularly great to write within the context of Wakanda, because so often we have a very singular story about Africa. And here with Wakanda, we have the most, as Alyssa pointed out, technologically advanced nation in the world. And they also are sitting on a stockpile of a mineral called vibranium. It's the metal that's used in Captain America's shield, and it's used in a lot of their weaponry. And it's just great to see superheroes elsewhere and looking different.
I mean, this is an African, a fictional African nation that's the most technically advanced in the world. But, you know, in the 50s when they were writing Superman, that was the United States at the end of World War II. No fiction about it. Here, part of the fantasy is the very characterization of the African country in which they're based.
If I can just shout out my friend Dayo Olapade's awesome book, The Bright Continent, it's mm-hmm. a really interesting look at innovation in Africa. And I think it's worth reading, I think, in the context of Roxanne and Ta-Nehisi's work, just because it's, you know, a chance to sort of, I think, look at the absolutely true stories about Africa as
a center. Not questioning the innovation that's there now, but still.
Totally. I just wanted to take that opportunity to say that it's a great companion reader.
Roxanne, is that an aspirational fantasy? That's what superheroes are often about.
I mean, I think it's part aspirational, but really it's part of just forcing people to expand their imaginations and the ways in which they think about Africa and African people. You know, we have very idealized ideas about the United States. We may be technologically advanced, but culturally, we're still in the last century. And so it's not so much aspiration as it is imagination.
And Abraham, what about taking the Americanness out of these sometimes? I mean, part of certainly the Superman, it was explicit right there, truth, justice, and the American way. These were supposed to be principled, high ideal battlers for goodness. And that was very much associated with Americanness. What do you see about the, I mean, a lot of that's still going on here. After all, Netflix is, these are American characters, Jessica, Luke, Daredevil. Mm-hmm. But does the old association of high values, high principle, and Americanness hold here as an exploration of the more difficult side of things?
Well, you know, I echo what Roxanne and Alyssa said, which is it's important to say that anybody can be a hero, and it's not restricted to, you know, innovation is not solely tied up with, you know, American views of capitalism, democracy, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's worth pointing out that one of the reasons Stan Lee, writer Stan Lee, and writer artist Jack Kirby created Black Panther back in 1966 is they just didn't want to be hacks. You know, the idea
one
of
more, cookie just cutter enough superhero.
Cookie, well, and also they wanted to introduce a black superhero, and they had the idea of doing an African.
These were white
superhero.
Guys,
right? These were white guys. Although, as I do like to point out, these were white guys who were born at a period when being Jewish, which they both were, kind of defined you as something outside of mainstream whiteness. So they had some understanding of being a marginalized in a marginalized community. Mm-hmm. But when they wanted to create this African character, they decided to avoid falling into the stereotype of having him be this, you know, exoticized vision of what an African king might be. They just thought it was going to be, much like what Roxanne was saying about writing World of Wakanda, they just wanted to tell a more interesting story. Mm-hmm. And beyond any notions of progressivism and representation, a lot of times one of the driving forces for greater representation is just wanting to tell different stories, more interesting stories, and mm-hmm. not falling back on tropes that are tired and boring.
Jim in Dearborn, Michigan. Jim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I had a question. It's a great show today. I had a question about, actually concern about racialism, though. And so much today, it seems, in media is racialized. So many things, such, you know, to the point where I'm not sure if we're really celebrating what we all have in common as much as pointing out differences to the point where it doesn't, it works against unity, our unity as a nation.
Hmm. So you're saying with the superhero depictions that are not, you know, straight, white, abled men, you're seeing this as like too much of a political statement? Is that what you're saying?
No, well, what I'm saying is that it seems that in celebrating diversity, there's also often a vilification of what you might call the establishment. So I think it ultimately, you know, breaks down into another type of racism. It's, I think, just we worried less about our differences. We celebrate our differences, but we really celebrate, also talk more about what we all have in common.
You know, I know what you're saying, Jim, but think about a time when all the superheroes or the prominent ones were just white guys. Isn't that racialism of a different kind? I mean, how do you get past that without diversifying?
It is, and I think that maybe it's just a matter of, oh, maybe how it's being handled in the media doesn't seem to be very positive, very constructive, as much as I think it could be. But, mm-hmm. but I agree. In the past, I mean, there's so much more. There's diversity in this country that really needs to be recognized, mm-hmm. needs to be celebrated. But at the same time, we need to talk about things that unite us too, not just simply, well, we've got these, you know, there's always a boogeyman. You know, yeah. there shouldn't have to be a boogeyman.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think with respect, you know, the things that divide us, the differential experiences that people of color and women have are really serious and persistent, and superhero stories that want to aspire to intellectual sophistication have to confront those. I mean, it's not, you know, black men who are shot by the police are not, like, those bullets don't emerge out of nowhere. Women who are sexually assaulted or sexually harassed, it's not some, like, invisible hand of God. There are people who do bad things, and superhero stories gain some of their power from their ability to sort of name and conceptualize the people who do really terrible things. And so I understand the impulse to unity, but at the same time, you know, women and people of color have had decades of practice of identifying with and, you know, finding ways to appreciate white superheroes. And so I think as an exercise of creative empathy, you know, if you can't find a way to empathize with a great positive character who doesn't necessarily look like you, or if you take offense to the sort of naming and exploration of real problems and real wrongs committed by real people, you know, these are not just exercises in affirmations. They are serious. They are serious works and deserve, I think, serious engagement in a way that goes beyond mere affirmation.
We're talking about the new face or faces of the American superhero. Roxanne, I want to bring that to you. Let me get one more call and I will. Cedric in Nashville. Cedric, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to address actually the most recent comment about racializing or the suggestion of over-racializing in a way that kind of divides us. Actually, I feel that, and this may be easier to see from the perspective of a marginalized group, but for the circumstance in which we're looking at oppression, which is a major social conflict, a major social problem, fixing it, the solution is also always going to be problematic, which is why we're always critiquing anything that kind of even looks at or looks like a solution.
Okay.
So
it's going to be difficult. Yeah.
The image of the African American by creating a superhero, and mind you, superheroes have been used to attempt to fix the ails of society over and over since the beginning of superheroes, since Superman. In trying to do that, it still becomes problematic because you're forced to confront with a bulletproof black man, for example. You're forced to confront the issues that made this necessary, and even though it may seem somewhat divisive, that's what's left to you. That's what's mm-hmm. left to us at this point. Mm-hmm. And addressing it is not is not necessarily easy, but African Americans have been struggling and dealing for many, many, many years with how to portray our struggle in a constructive way, in a way that's actually going to do some good for the problem.
Cedric, we've got it, and I really appreciate your call. I want to take it to Roxane Gay while we have time. Roxane, what about it? More diverse superheroes necessarily dividing people, or can they take us to a better place with their superpowers?
Oh, I think it's absolute nonsense, this idea that it would divide people. You know, we often see diversity as it's about inclusion. It's not about separation. And so diversity and unity are not antithetical. Mm-hmm. It's recognizing simply that there isn't only one kind of person out in the world. And it's interesting that we have so few diverse representations and people are already panicking, like, oh, my God, what does this mean for unity? The things that affect unity are the very real dangers that marginalized people face in the world. It's certainly not going to come from seeing a more inclusive kind of representation where we see disability and race and gender and sexuality and sexual violence and these kinds of things addressed in superheroes. I think it's the kind of thing that brings us together because more people can see themselves in these huge properties in our pop culture and feel like, okay, yeah, we're part of the world too, and we can be a part of saving the world.
We've become ever more diverse. We will continue to. Are the superheroes racing ahead or just catching up, Roxane, in a word?
They're catching up.
America changing. Superheroes changing too. Roxane Gay will write the forthcoming companion series to Black Panther. It's called World of Wakanda. Roxane, in Lafayette, Indiana, thanks so much for being with us today. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me again, Tom.
Alyssa Rosenberg, pop culture writer for The Washington Post. Great to be out in superhero world with you. Thanks for being here, Alyssa.
Always a pleasure.
And Abraham Reisman at New York Magazine and Vulture.com. Thank you very much, Abraham.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great.
All right. Saluting all those superheroes who got with the Captain America March. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.